Next item on the agenda is public comments. This is the opportunity for those in the audience who wish to speak on matters that are not specifically on the agenda. Public comments. Captain Bob Jensen.
I swear, everything will be the truth.
I am certain of that. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm here to spread the joy. Yesterday, or the day before yesterday, we did a photographic survey of Steamer Rock with the latest high-tech equipment that my director of underwater operations has in his business, and the results are fantastic. It's a drop camera. You can get down in the crevices and you can slowly bring it up, and you can view and you can aim it wherever you want. And the report that I'm bringing to you today is that Steamer Rock is probably one of the most healthy and productive and prolific oyster reef that we've got in the Chesapeake Bay, or maybe even anywhere on this planet. We have achieved, according to the scientists, we've achieved over 1,100 oysters, a density of over 1,100 oysters per meter in our reef. And so, I'm here to tell you about it because you don't really know what I do, because I'm not really part of your team. I'm the grassroots. And I got involved in reef design and reef building because I'm an engineer and it needed to be done. And the opportunity came along 14 years ago when the Commissioner of Highways of the Virginia came down to our county and held a public meeting, and with the good news and the bad news. And the good news was, hey, we've got a project out on the street to fix the Norris Bridge, because it was, the old deck was getting blown out by the overweight lumber trucks that continually use it even to today. But anyway, the bad news was they were going to have to close the bridge down from 10 at night until 6 in the morning. And that, you might ask, what's that got to do with anything? That's got a lot to do with oysters. Because my neighbor was part of the crew working for McLean Corporation in 1955 and 56. When he built the foundations for the cofferdams on the piers that hold that bridge up. And one of the things that he told me was, hey, you know, they withheld our last payment on the bridge, you know, for our work on the cofferdam, because the weight of the bridge had to be on the piers for a year before they would pay the last payment to make sure there wasn't any crumbling or any defects in the structure of the bridge, the supporting structure. Now, when they were dedicating the bridge in 1957, they were doing the underwater dive inspection, because that was the year the weight of the bridge had been on about a year when they dedicated it. And guess what? At every pier station, there are 21 pier stations in that 2 mile bridge that were critical, and at every one of them, the concrete was covered from the high water mark to the bottom with oysters that were about the size of a silver dollar. Now, I don't know what that would tell you, but it told me that, hey, that's a good area. And concrete is a good substrate for, and we got 2 miles of it coming off the bridge that's configured in such a way that if we do the right cutting plan, hey, we can build some really good reef modules to put overboard. And so my partner and I, John Ridley, we got busy. We had meetings with the engineers of the highway department. The chief engineer, Jack Hogg was his name. Hodges was his name. Anyway, tough old bird, but he was about ready to retire. But he could see the point. And the point was, if we could reuse that bridge, and if we could devise a way, because we were going to keep that bridge open 24/7, because closing the bridge down would effectively absolutely ruin the chances of the hospital with 40% of the business over in the Deltaville area.
Captain Bob, I'm going to
need to get to the work.
Please do. Thank you.
The point is. We did the job. You know what we did.
Yep.
And I'm here to tell you that it's dynamite. And we've got the photometrics of it. And we're going to bring the disc up for you to look at and put in our record in our folder.
Okay.
And I'm going to proceed with that. Was my plan. You've got a copy of it. My plan. Which is the 2020 program. I'm not going to even get into it today because all I want to do is leave some pictures with you, and then I'm gone.
Got your report. Thank you so very much, Captain.
And who do I give
them to? You give them to Jack, and he'll pass, or Jack or Rob, and they'll pass them out.
Yeah. One for everybody. And Ridley's letter is important.
Thank you, Captain Bob. Who's next?
Thank you.
Have a good day. Next item on the agenda is public hearing.
Public comments.
I have authorized it, and I'm not going to get it up in time for you. Doug Jenkins of Twin River Waterman Association. I have a suggestion and ask for you to consider it, and hopefully that you recommend it. The Fin Fish Advisory Committee has a chairman on it from this board. The Crab Advisory Committee has a chairman on this voice from this board. But the Oyster Advisory Committee does not have a chairman on it. And I think it's appropriate to have one from this board assigned to that. Basically for the keep order and focus on what's being said, which is very important for the establishing of the season and moving seed and whatever. Reason I'm saying that last meeting that we attended, a lot of our time was wasted with one waterman complaining about the law enforcement. And finally I told him that if he had that right, he ought to take it to either you or whoever to the handle the law enforcement issues, that there wasn't a place for it to have it on an advisory committee. But I thought.
Thank you for keeping order for me. Jack, did we ever given any thought to that? You want to comment on that?
We haven't given any thought to it recently, but it's certainly something we can do.
Let's see, who's gone now? Who's gone now?
Yeah, talk about.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Carter said, yeah, he'd do it.
Yeah,
he'd
good one.
No, that's not him.
Hey, John, we'll
watch it. Watch
it, all in favor, of course.
Yeah, I moved the week. Put Carter in.
I second that, buddy.
No, you've already got the Crab Committee. If you'll take it, I don't think it's a very good idea.
Well, he's always been interested in oysters. That's his. Maybe he
will. Well, I'll entertain a motion. Mr. Schick?
I move that we... maybe my company,
yes.
I move that we ask Carter Fox to chair the Oyster Committee. I think that would be a good idea.
Second to the motion?
I'll second that motion.
Second, Mr. Holland, further discussion. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We'll ask him when he gets back. Who's here for public comment anymore? Oh, there you are.
Congratulations,
Mr. Chairman.
That's right.
It'll teach you to leave.
You got a point.
Mr. Fox, the commission has asked that by motion, unanimous, I might add, if you would agree to chair the Oyster Advisory Panel. We have commission members that chair all the other Oyster Advisory Committee. We have commission members that chair the other, the crab and finfish. I wondered if you would consider
it. I'll consider it actively, and I'll speak to you after the meeting.
I'll get him, Doug. Mr. Travels,
you had, Commissioner, you had asked that I bring up this letter from H.M. Arnold during public comment.
Yes, please.
We have a letter from H.M. Arnold on behalf of himself and his two partners, Hayes Angle and Pete West, once again asking that you set aside the provision in the pound net regulation that requires individuals to set their nets in a given year in order to be eligible for that license in the following year. You've done this two out of the last 3 years, I believe, on the basis of the various storms that have occurred and the economic impacts that are associated with those. In light of the letter, we're asking for that this be considered during public comment, public hearing next month. In fact, we would suggest that rather than doing this sort of piecemeal from year to year, that we give some additional thought to this issue. Pound net fishery is a fishery that's disappearing in Chesapeake Bay. It's a very expensive gear, you know, thousands of dollars to set it. If times are not just right, if the cost of fuel is not right, if the fish aren't in the area, there are times when it makes no sense for a fisherman to set that gear. But under law, if he doesn't set it, he loses it the following year. So it seems to staff that we need to give some longer-term consideration to the period of time during which they have to set it in order to maintain it, perhaps longer than a year. On the other hand, we don't want people to tie up good fishing sites that might be used by another fisherman by simply, you know, avoiding having to set his net. So we've got to give some thought to it. And I'm not sure we'll have that final solution for you at the next meeting, but at a minimum, I think we can consider once again delaying this provision of the regulation.
What are you asking for, a public hearing on set aside for next month?
Yes.
Mr. Bowden, you need to comment on that? Or?
Let
me get the working waterman first, then I'll get Mr. Fox.
I've talked to Mr. Arnold. The recent storm about a month ago destroyed his poles. He only fishes in the fall of the year, the three of them right. Fish together. So there's no way he can abide by it. And you would think this last week and this week there's going to be no possibilities of putting in poles. And in all likelihood, there may be more pole damage.
It's blowing a gale
around. So I think this is a good idea that we, and as far as the time frame, just talking, because we're not going to set that today. Maybe we need to expand it to a two-year period. And if somebody doesn't fish within 2 years, we can just feel like they're probably tying it up unless there's some very important circumstance that kept them from doing it. I don't know what that would be, but it would be extreme.
Well, one thing you could consider, Mr. Fox, one thing you could consider is having a two-year period and then giving staff some latitude to evaluate the reasoning that they give, maybe to keep it from having to come before the commission. But Mr. Fox, continue, please.
I guess I'm just concerned about the poles being abandoned and whether you can include something about abandoned poles in your considerations as well.
Yeah, at the end of 2 years, if they haven't been fished or a satisfactory reason given to staff, the poles come up, or if the poles become deteriorated or problematic. I'll entertain a motion for public hearing next month on that subject. Mr. Fox?
So moved.
Motion made by Mr. Fox, second by Mr. Bowden. Further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Travelstead. Next, is any more public comment? Going once?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fox.
We had a letter from Secretary Bryant having to do with unique circumstances on if we were to ask him for suggestions, he had some suggestions.
I was going to get Mr. Grab to bring that up at the end of the agenda, but
fine.
But since we've approached it, Mr. Grab.
Yes, sir. As the commission, with the exception of Mr. Lane, knows, in the 2007 legislature, the General Assembly provided a mechanism for the commission to use in determining the value of property that had been previously filled and was being transferred by the General Assembly to a private property, which involves 10 years of assessments and, you know, the square footage and prorating it. And the commission in December of last year used that formula to transfer property to December partners, which essentially amounted to the 25%. At the time that the bill was enacted, in order to give the commission latitude, I guess, the General Assembly did provide that there was a mechanism whereby the commission could deviate from the formula that was being provided if there was a set of unique circumstances. Up until now, we've only, even though you have five conveyances that are in the wings, five parcels for which the General Assembly has already granted the conveyance subject to the terms and conditions. We thought they were going to be presented in August or September. They may be next month, but it does provide a mechanism whereby the commission can do it. What the letter that Mr. Fox referred to from the secretary indicated that he may have some ideas on what those unique circumstances might be. And in discussing it with the commissioner, I think at this point, quite frankly, we're waiting to see exactly what the secretary would offer in the way of, you know, circumstances that the commission may want to consider. I think it's the commissioner's intent to bring those suggestions to the commission. And in fact, if we get that prior to having to consider, you know, the conveyances, they'd be used. If not, we'd be handling it the same way that we handled the December partners conveyance.
I think it's the secretary's intent to ask the commission. He does not. He's very specific in his letter that he does not want to usurp the authority of the commission. In fact, he goes so far as to say, if you don't want to hear from me, basically just let me know. But I've, through my experience with Secretary Bryant, the ideas that I've gotten from him have been pretty good ideas. So
I think it would be foolhardy for us to ignore his ideas.
That's close to a motion. Can I get one?
Yes. I recommend that the chairman ask Secretary Bryant for what ideas he has for the conveyance of subaqueous land.
Second by Mr. Schick. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Jenny, send the letter out this afternoon.